Welcome to Throwing Mountains Weekly Strength. I'm your host, Chris Bollinger. For the next 12 or 13 minutes, we're going to draw strength from the Bible. I encourage you to make this a daily practice on your own. We're at the midpoint in our look at tough topics in the Bible and the Christian life. This week's tough topic is masculinity. The Bible passage for this episode is Job 40, 1-14. I'll read it from the New American Bible Revised Edition, which sometimes is called the Catholic Bible. The Lord then answered Job and said, "Will one who argues with the Almighty be corrected? Let him who would instruct God give answer." Then Job answered the Lord and said, "Look, I am of little account. What can I answer you? I put my hand over my mouth. I have spoken once, I will not reply. Twice, but I will do so no more." Then the Lord answered Job out of the storm and said, "Gird up your loins now like a man. I will question you, and you tell me the answers. Would you refuse to acknowledge my right? Would you condemn me that you may be justified? Have you an arm like that of God, and can you thunder with a voice like His? Adorn yourself with grandeur and majesty, and clothe yourself with glory and splendor. Let loose the fury of your wrath. Look at everyone who is proud and bring them down. Look at everyone who is proud and humble them. Tear down the wicked in their place. Bury them in the dust together. In the hidden world imprison them. Then will I too praise you, for your own right hand can save you." As an author, I probably shouldn't admit this, but I don't read a lot of books. When I was in high school and college, I read books all the time. Not just the ones that I had to read, such as the required reading for English class. I read for enjoyment, mostly science fiction and fantasy. I polished off almost everything written by Isaac Asimov, including his Foundation series and a bunch of short story anthologies such as I, Robot. I read the first two Dune novels. The two recent Dune movies are adapted from the first book, and 5 hours of film just touches on the contents of that book. Same deal with the Lord of the Rings trilogy. If you think that the films are long, then try reading the books. They are massive, but I loved them. I also read novels and short stories by Ray Bradbury and others. I was a busy teenager. I ran cross country, I played basketball, ran track, and played tennis all summer. I played the cello in the high school orchestra and sang in church choir and a community choir. I had chores at home and odd jobs in the neighborhood. And during the school year, I had a lot of homework. But when I had spare time, I spent a lot of it reading. Now, I rarely read an entire book. But I do read some books, and a few of them have had a big impact on me. One that did, and still does, is the book Why Men Hate Going to Church by David Murrow. I first read it around 2009, and it was a real eye-opener for me. I don't remember why I read the book, because I definitely did not hate going to church. For as long as I can remember, I went to church every Sunday, or at least every Sunday that I could. My week didn't feel complete if I didn't worship in church on Sunday morning. For lack of a better term, I was a church guy. The liturgical Lutheran service with which I grew up was a good fit for me. I liked to sing, and in the Lutheran service you sang all the time. A typical service included not just three or four hymns, but singing throughout the liturgy. It also included a lot of opportunities to read, both out loud and silently. A lot of the reading came from the Bible. Every service there was an Old Testament passage, a psalm, a New Testament passage from a book other than one of the Gospels, and a Gospel passage. I really didn't read the Bible at home, so Sunday morning service was my Bible time for the week. I tended to zone out during a lot of the sermons that I heard, but that was okay because I connected to God mostly through music and through reading the Bible, and I got that connection every Sunday. When I read Murrow's book, I realized that most guys are not church guys like I am. They don't get energized and connected to God at church. Instead, they get frustrated. For starters, many men don't like to sing, especially unfamiliar songs, so the music part of a worship service ends up being a passive activity for them. So are all the responsive readings in the liturgical service because many men don't like to read, especially out loud. And the sermon is another passive activity, where you sit there and listen to a lecture, often with few or no visuals, for 20, 30, 40 minutes or longer. In fact, many men view the entire worship service as a totally passive activity without a lot of relevance. The same is true for other church activities such as Sunday school, small groups, and even some so-called men's group activities. They don't play to men's strengths, and men just aren't motivated to participate in them. I was so impacted by Murrow's book that I ended up contacting him online, and we became friends. About 5 years after I read the book, Murrow called me. He was getting ready to lead a weekend men's retreat in Central Ohio, about an hour and a half from my house, and he invited me to come along and be his assistant for some of the lessons that he taught. Murrow is a pioneer in teaching men in ways that resonate with men. At the retreat, every lesson had this format. Murrow would do a very short object lesson or parable, usually involving some of the men in the room. He wouldn't tell them what it meant. Instead, he would instruct them to talk it over with the other guys at their table. After the table discussions, Murrow would ask a representative of each table to explain what had been taught and what it meant, not just in an abstract sense, but to the men in the room. The most memorable lesson was one on the strongest man in the room. There were five tables in the room with about a dozen guys at each table. Murrow told each table to select its strongest man and send him to the front of the room. Five men came forward. The test to determine who was the strongest of the five men would be a test of doing push-ups. It was a test of endurance. Each man had to keep doing push-ups without more than a second in between until four of the five dropped out. I tell you, these guys were amazing. All five lasted at least 2 minutes. At that point, two men quit. A minute later, a third dropped out, so it was down to two. These two men went at it for another minute, then two, then three. Finally, one of them could not lift his chest off the floor. He was done. We had a winner. Murrow paraded that man around the front of the room to the applause of everyone else. Then Murrow instructed the man to sit on his throne, a chair, in front of the rest of the men. As soon as the man sat down, I zip-tied his wrists and ankles to the chair. "Let's see how strong you are now," said Murrow. "Get out of the chair." The man made a mighty effort to break the zip ties. He strained to pull his wrists up, to no avail. As he tried to move his legs, he flipped his chair and himself to the ground. After we righted the chair, Murrow asked the room, "How is our strong man going to be freed? Can he struggle his way to freedom? Can he pray his way to freedom? What will it take to restore him to full strength?" The room was silent for a while. Then a man in the back shouted, "Anybody got a knife?" At that, I pulled out a pocket knife and freed our champion, and Murrow told the men in the room to discuss the meaning of what they had just witnessed. After their table discussions, they offered this summary. Just as the strongest man in the room was unable to break free from the zip ties, a strong Christian man can find himself unable to break free from sin on his own. He needs help from God and support from his brothers. The problem is that most men don't have any Christian brothers. Today's Christian men are attempting to follow Jesus without a single man to walk beside them on the journey. In addition, many men have never had a good example of what it means to be a man of God. In biblical times, the primary teacher of what it means to be a man and a man of God was your dad. Fathers recognized that their every word and action was training for all their children, but especially for their sons. That's why Solomon wrote this in Proverbs 22, "Train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it." Unfortunately, at least one out of four U.S. boys is raised without a father in the home. Boys who grow up without a father are 2 times more likely to drop out of high school, 2 times more likely to commit suicide, 4 times more likely to live in poverty, 9 times more likely to be raped or sexually abused, and 20 times more likely to become incarcerated. They also have a much tougher time understanding what healthy masculinity is. Vince Miller, who started the men's ministry Resolute, writes that, for fatherless boys, defining masculinity is deceptively difficult because you've never had a role model for true and healthy manhood. Even when fathers are around, they may be emotionally distant or have other flaws that make them poor models for healthy masculinity. Jesus, of course, was not only the perfect man, but also the perfect model of manhood. Consider just one overlooked aspect of Jesus, his toughness. Right after his baptism, Jesus went into the wilderness and fasted for 40 days. Satan tempted Jesus throughout the 40 days, and even at the end, when Jesus was barely able to move or speak, he still resisted the temptations. Then Jesus embarked on a 3-year ministry that was extraordinarily stressful, and he knew that it would end in an incredibly painful scourging and crucifixion. The entire time, Jesus exhibited unparalleled physical and emotional toughness. He also demonstrated courage and leadership and humility and love and hundreds of other traits worth emulating. To translate the example of Jesus to their own lives, men need help from other men who, like they, are following Jesus. The last day of the retreat was a Sunday. After a time of worship, before they headed back home, the men decided to take Murrow's strongest man object lesson to heart. Each man put a zip tie on his wrist and agreed to wear it for a week. The next Sunday, in their home church, the men gathered together in front of the congregation. One explained the lesson to everyone in the room, and then the men cut the zip ties off each other's wrists. Next week, I'll look at the topic of politics. I hope you'll join me for that. Please pick up a copy of 52 Weeks of Strength for Men. You'll find it to be a good resource on this journey. Have a good week, man.